Episode commencing in 3, 2, 1. Episode initiated.
Welcome back to another second edition planning episode of Series 1 of Cosmic Crit 2.0 and other numbers and titles for this episode. This is your Game Master Patrick here, and joining me in dishing stats and summoning bats is my good friend and podcaster extraordinaire, Drew. How are you doing?
Hey, Drew. Everybody.
Whoa, welcome back, Drew. How are you doing tonight?
Boy, when you make something fully random, it is a challenge.
Do you want to get right into it, Drew? Do you don't want to have any small talk in your episode?
We can do small talk.
Up the draft like you're ready to go.
Look, I have been preparing for all of your gotchas. And despite how I'm going to sound on this episode or on this recording, I have done a lot of work. It just may not seem like I've done a lot of work.
Oh. Drew, does your character have any aunts or uncles? And what are their names?
No.
Now, if you were Tyler, you would have that information like Rolodexed ready to go.
Yeah, no, I don't have the character family tree ready. My character does not currently have a name because Kalo names are tough to come up with.
You should just get like a fish name and change it up a little bit.
No,
instead of Bass, do
it's gonna be
Ass.
Beelu Baas, and that's, nobody wants that.
Beelub. No, we can just get into things. We can talk about it. We've had a draft, a 2025 character draft at this point a few weeks ago. And I'm not sure the order that these episodes are coming out. So you could be the first character episode people here. I'm not entirely sure. I think that'd be funny because you're actually one of the last we're recording here. But yeah, you indicated before we started the draft that your intention was to randomly roll a PC, a player character, and I made the rules because I'm all about that. You were having a little bit of difficulty or indecision in character creation early on. Was that fair to say?
Yes, definitely. Part of
too many options, or
it's sort of how the die rolled was part of it, but it's also just like I have created a bunch of like really intricate character backstories, not as intricate for me, not Tyler or Jabert intricate, definitely not Tyler intricate, but I've made a lot of really intricate character backstories for my last few characters, and as it has played out on the show, I feel like I haven't really done those characters service from a storytelling background, from a character performance background. So I was twofold in that I didn't want to have too much built before we started, because I wanted to leave things not necessarily simpler, which whenever you make the character, the type of character that I have, it's never going to be simple because any spellcaster is not that simple. But I wanted to go more straightforward and simpler with the kind of character backstory to give my character room to grow into who he will end up being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where the more I took out of my own hands, the happier I was going to be. Now, as it turns out, with the way things rolled, I rolled something kind of complex.
Maybe not the most complex of Pathfinder classes, but pretty high up there.
There are definitely much more complex characters. It's just this is also the first time I've really ever spent a ton of time playing a spellcaster, especially one that was not pre-built, that already had all of this stuff laid out for me. And so that's where, and combining that with, I haven't really played a ton of 2E. I've built one character in 2E. There's a lot to know and a lot to go through. So this is going to be an interesting experiment.
It's the opposite of your wife, Rebecca, who had almost everything prepped for the character before we sat to draft.
Rebecca and I are married? What?
Last time anyone checked, yeah. But it does make me wonder if she's like the doomsday prepper of your couple, and then you're like the go with the flow kind of guy.
I mean, she is a little bit more of a planner, but not in the doomsday prepper way for sure. And I am very much more of a, if you look at us on vacation, she's got things planned out and I'm just going with the flow. That is
okay. That makes always done sense. How you guys drafted. See, I'm not a planner myself, Drew.
Water puns incoming. Just oh boy. So you know.
I'm not a planner. I'm a schemer. They're different. I've got machinations, but no plans. Do I look like a guy with a plan to you? It's so funny because Heath Ledger's Joker had the craziest plan. Yeah. Before we get into the nitty gritty, how do you think the draft went? Not just for you, but for the podcast, for everybody.
I think it went pretty well. I was surprised that there was a number of randomized things. I wasn't the only person doing random stuff.
I was about to say, are you angry that Jabert stole your thunder and was like, I'm going to roll random too?
No, I'm glad that I wasn't by myself. But it was also very funny when Tyler had so many randomly rolled out from underneath him, which was
I think my favorite part was when Tyler was like, just spit it out, Patrick. I was announcing Jabert's ancestry and it was his like number two choice. Good times. I mean, that draft all but assured me that we would be doing it again for the next time we make characters. Yeah,
it was fun. I was honestly a little surprised that we had so many Pathfinder classes.
Yeah, especially because I will say Jabert rolled a little bit differently. He had his own thing. I had a tiered, like the Starfinder classes were like 1 through 15 or something, and then all the Pathfinder classes if you rolled like a 16 or higher. So it was a random chance for sure, but it was much more likely that you rolled a Starfinder class, even some of the ones that are still in playtest version. I have to remember to like save those notes because it could be like over a year before we do that again. Who knows? But yeah, I'm surprised. I knew that Rebecca wanted to do champion. I don't know if she revealed that to anyone else.
I knew, but
yeah. But I didn't think, I guess it's possible that someone could have randomly rolled it, but I didn't think anyone was gunning for it. So I told her, like, you're probably fine. But yeah, you did roll some random stuff, and we got the outline of a character here in the ancestry of the Kalo or Kalo. I'm actually sure.
I don't know. I didn't look to see if anybody had pronounced it before.
I feel like I've said Kalo in the past, but the fun thing about this is can pronounce it however we want. It's our podcast, Drew.
You want to know
Wysoki is how I'm saying it now. You're a Wysoki.
You want to know a fun Star Trek thing about name pronunciation and things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure this has already come up on the show like in the last 2 weeks. Brent Spiner's character in Star Trek The Next Generation, when he was preparing for the role, had been saying in his head about his own character's name, Data.
Yeah.
Data, data, data. And when they sat down to the first table read, Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard says his name first and says it as Data.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there became this thing of who's right? Is it Data or is it Data? And they, in the moment, just decided whoever says it the first time, whatever that pronunciation is the way it's going to go. So that's why Data is pronounced Data.
You have naming rights forever. We've got Kalo. We've got the background of recruit in randomly rolled wizard.
Whew.
Space wizard. Came from the moon of
Kalo Mahoy. The fact that it says Mahoy.
Kalo Mahoy, bro.
Kalo Mahoy, dudes. Like, it does sound like a surfer thing, but
the entire planet is surf ninjas. This is Miles' character now, Drew.
Oh no! I've got to reroll again.
Yeah. So let's talk about it a little bit. Honestly, we not too much to talk about in the background. I really wanted to focus in on some options with the Kalo and some options with Wizard. And this is not your first Starfinder Second Edition character that you've made, because you made Scally.
Scally, which again, I made Scally and we played with them one time, so I don't remember a ton about that process.
We played with them several times over the course of a year. I think we started, we made that character like a year ago today. But did you have questions about the ancestry part of the character that you rolled? We've had some interactions with the Kalo before, but not that many, honestly.
The thing about it is that I look at it and I look at the feats and the heritages, I think the Kalo, however we pronounce it, are really cool in that they are both have a strong militaristic history, which works for the recruit background no matter what I do. Because as I learned, because I didn't know this as I was planning for this conversation a couple of weeks ago until earlier today. Apparently the Kalo have mandatory military service, so I can just kind of work that into whatever character backstory I want. But it was really getting more into the feats and the heritages that I'm tempted to take like the easy way out on things, which is not necessarily the most fun thing to do.
I will say about the background is because it is the least like options you have to pick and like impact on your character later on, because you get ancestry feats later on, and of course class stuff happens like every level. Your background is just like one little aspect that doesn't affect things much after character creation, so you can pick fun options. And I felt that way in Starfinder First Edition with the icon and all those other backgrounds that you could pick. So yeah, this is definitely one that people can go nuts with, and it won't affect your character too much, unless you were really hoping to have two very strong ability scores, if you wanted like a 18 and a 16,
which I don't,
plus four,
don't,
plus three.
I don't know that I'm gonna get there.
You probably with intellect, but because of some of the other options that you have here with your character creation, probably won't have any other 16. I guess it's possible, but no. I think at most you can have 118 or 216s, aka I keep saying the first non-revised edition of Pathfinder Second Edition. You can have 1+4 or 2+3s. Anyway, it doesn't mean a ton to you having not played a lot of this, but the revised edition, they've gotten rid of like the attribute scores of being like between 10 and 20, and now they're just doing the bonuses,
which is fine. It's just it's the whole like untrained, trained, expert, like what those translate into numbers that I don't have up here yet.
They're just plus two. Each of them is another plus two. Yeah, that like when you level up, it'll be like, hey, put this from trained to expert, and you'll be like, boop, and you click a little box probably and roll 20, and it'll be like, okay, you got another plus two now. And that's basically it. I do like the Kalo. I think there are a lot of fun versions of them that you can play. I will say one decision you have to make early on here in your character creation is if you want to take their attribute mechanics or if you want to just take two free boosts. So normally Kalo is a dexterity boost, a charisma boost, and a free boost when you take the ancestry, and they also have the attribute flaw of constitution. So in total, it is a two boosts like average if you include the constitution boost. So you got three plus ones and one minus one. Any ancestry you can eschew and get rid of those mechanics and instead just choose two free boosts. That can't be the same thing. So two different attributes to boost up. Do you have any inkling of what you want to focus on there with this character, or what kind of wizard?
I definitely want to go with intelligence for sure.
Okay, so that could be, that could be a free in either system. Do you see your character as having a constitution flaw, potentially a con of 8 or minus 1?
I will be 100% honest. I have only been planning for that because I didn't know about the other way to do this.
I mentioned it very briefly in the draft. As far as ancestries go, that is a kind of a new rule. I think it might have been in the base Pathfinder Second Edition, but it will tell you early on in the character creation rule section that, and it's I think it's a positive change. It basically means you can make them like human or more human stats, which is just two free boosts instead of having a flaw.
I get it, but I was rolling this randomly for a reason, and I feel like I'm going to hold myself to as much of the way that it's on the page normally.
Okay, that is great. I think it's great for a wizard, to be perfectly honest, because typically they are what's known as glass
cannons. Yeah.
Yeah. That's someone breathes on you and you die. And I think of weak fish bones as being a low constitution.
We will get stuck in your throat and it will be awful.
Oh, yes. You can eat us. Sure, giant monster. But you're going to pay for it. Back,
Don't they?
No. OK, that's just one thing that I want to point out there. If you do that, you get dexterity, charisma, and then, the other free boost. I would recommend making intelligence definitely a 16. But maybe even an 18 or a plus 4. I keep saying the whole numbers. Definitely a plus 3, but potentially a plus 4, which is the highest you can have at character creation by taking the intelligence free with your background, your ancestry, and then you get, as a wizard, a plus to your intelligence as well. And then you get 4 free ones after that, and I'll obviously make 1 intelligence there. Okay. If that kind of makes your choice, though, with recruit, the other attribute score you get is either strength or constitution. Do you think it might be strength for that?
So only because with the Kalo military tradition, I guess I could do constitution and lean into my other weapon, my non-magic weapon. Granted, they have made a lot of cantrips a lot more powerful to be able to cast on a regular basis versus 20. Part of me wants to go constitution to offset the negative for the ancestry, but another one of me wants to do strength just because I am envisioning, based on some things we will talk about later, having a cool, stylish melee weapon that I may never use. But if I do, it will look rad.
Yeah. Well, that was honestly, we can get to the chatting about the wizard now, the class here, because I feel like that's Kalo fits right in with the Starfinder universe. And there's a whole bunch of cool directions you can take. But the wizard, you've had some chin scratching going on about why a wizard in Starfinder when there's technomancer.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, why of all of the magic traditions, why would someone go down the path of the old school classic wizardry stuff when you could be affecting people's cyber implants and stuff like
Drew,
that?
Drew, the dice want you to play a wizard. That's why.
Which I'm doing, baby. I'm doing
following the dice gods. Wizards, I honestly don't quite understand myself the desire, and you should probably get some advice from Jabert because he has played a wizard in the past. But the power of the wizard is versatility. you can technically, with enough time and money in the campaign, learn every spell in the spell book that you like have access to. I don't personally, as a player or in GM, I don't find that as useful because that's just like more choices, but you can make multiple.
Still only ready so many spells a day anyway, so that
and it's like you can tailor them. Like you wake up in the morning and study your spell list, and you can tailor them to like if you know you're going to be doing a stealth mission that day, or if you know you're going to be fighting lava monsters just from sunup to sundown, just lava monsters all day long, or if the things that you're going up against are undead and you want to make sure that you cast spells that are effective or not ineffective against undead. So I understand that is like their main bonus, is they can eventually have every spell or so many spells that they want on their spell list. I guess I'm a dumb sorcerer type who's just like, spam fireball. It's a solution to every problem. Oh, what? We got lava monsters? They're not fire monsters. Fireball. I think Wizard in Starfinder is cool. In general, I feel like a lot of Pathfinder 2E classes will translate pretty darn well to Starfinder. And we'll talk about more with of those
one,
options.
With one rare exception. And this is where I'm glad that I talked to you before we sat down to record, because I had a whole idea and character concept based off of the wizard school the school of the Thessalonian rune magic. No, it's the one with Magitek, the one that focuses on Magitek. School of Magical Technologies. Mm-hmm. And then immediately found out that any of the things that use runes on weapons and things like that just don't affect Starfinder stuff at all, which seems a little bit like an oversight, but maybe I just haven't. I haven't play tested it, and maybe it would make those weapons too powerful in 2E. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like you can. And I guess we could talk about it now. You can play a character that uses runes, uses like what is, I guess, now known as more like archaic weapons and things. But almost everyone else on the team is going to be using like high tech technology from the Starfinder universe. They played around in Starfinder First Edition having some analog. Like when you got to the Kish city, they had all kind of analog weapons, and it was a wild difference in Starfinder First Edition. They did -5 damage to like modern spacesuits.
Yeah, there was
a bow and arrow just wasn't effective.
Like I love that they had it, but it was also like, why bother having it if it's literally going to be nothing?
It's fine because there's so many things that don't have a spacesuit, like just big alien dinosaurs, it would be exactly the same as any other weapon. But yeah, exactly. It's not the same here. Honestly, some analog weapons in Starfinder might be advantageous because there's all kinds of spells and EMP blasts that can like make technological weapons glitch out and things. But yeah, I just don't think that's going to happen frequently enough to be like, I'm going to just use a hand axe.
Exactly. So I'm glad you said that, which set me down other paths, and unfortunately, probably the most complicated path I could come up with.
Did you want to talk about these schools of magic? Did you have another one in mind?
So there are a number of schools of magic in the Pathfinder situation that all seem to be based around like a set amount of ideas. Like this one is definitely all about hiding yourself and going invisible and using poisons and things like that, and ones that are all about like communicating with other people, and ones that are just like all about battle magic, so throwing projectiles and fire and all sorts of stuff. And the whole school thing, I believe, is new-ish to 2E, as far as how it comes out.
There used to be a different types of magic still exist in the game, but they're not like as segmented as they are. So abjuration and conjuration, there's 7 schools. And basically, I think in first edition, when you made a wizard, you picked like a focus school and you got bonuses to those spells, and then like a anathema school, and like you usually, I don't think, took any spells from that. So like some people would be like, okay, undead will be my anathema, and I just won't use those spells. A little different here, these schools, you get additional spells to add to your spell list. Whenever you level up, you get them automatically as part of your school's studies, and then you get a initial school spell as well.
Both an initial and an advanced school spell.
Yeah, those come a little bit later with the focus spell. But the focus spell, you can basically take like a short rest and I think get it back.
So yeah, that is one other thing. There are focus spells that use focus points and not spell slots. Mm-hmm. Regardless, as I looked over all of this, it made the most amount of sense based on the ones that were there to go with the School of Unified Magical Theory, aka a school you make up yourself.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was one that I suggested to you in general, as being like, Kalo could just have their own magical history that is,
which they certainly probably do. There's no set Kalo school, but as a result, you do lose out on the school spells as you level up, but instead of that, you get an additional first level class feat. So I will have that going for me, and an additional first rank spell in my spell book. Whether I can use that every day or not, because you can only prepare so many spells. That's the other thing.
Yep.
And I can use drain bonded item, which is a whole other thing that I haven't gotten fully into yet. I can use it multiple times a day based on that instead of just once.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. So that basically allows you to cast any spell that you've already cast that day again by draining it. And usually it could be your wizard staff or a wand or just some object that you have in your service. Have you looked at the wizard feats yet? Because it sounds like you get 2 now, and there's not that many at level 1. There's 6.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I did, 5. But I need to look at them again to refresh my memory, because that's the one tab I didn't open, and I...
I'm certain you'll be so excited to have Counterspell
That at level 1, that could be huge.
It's mostly for same level spells. So like if you're fighting like a really powerful boss, it might do very little for you, but it can shut down another wizard, shut down a wizard or other magic user, I should say, which is very nice. It is a type of reaction where you can just blast your own spell energy at an enemy. Other feats wizards have access to, there's 2 kind of meta magic feats. One is called Reach Spell and the other is Widen Spell, and they do pretty much exactly what you think. If it's like a radius or an area thing, the Widen Spell widens it, and if it's a attack or something that has a range, you increase its range with Reach. Both okay. Spellbook Prodigy is more about like the speed and I think cost of like copying spells into your spellbook. Yeah, and
this is the thing that I guess I needed to talk to you about, because as I look through the spell lists trying to craft my first level spell list, which I have not done and I am still working on.
It doesn't sound like you made your character yet, so it's fine.
Yeah, I wanted to be prepared for you. I did notice that there are a number of what is the phrase? Uncommon and rare spells. And as far as I can tell, those spells I can't just pick. I have to learn them through the course of play based on meeting someone that can teach it to me kind of stuff.
Do you have an example of one?
So, for example, Elemental Counter. You or a creature within 60 feet rolls a saving throw against a spell with the earth, fire, metal, plant, water, or wood trait, and you are targeted by that. Each element in this elemental cycle counters another, and you can use your elemental spells to protect against elements they counter. You lose your spell slot as if you had cast the triggered spell. You then attempt to counteract the triggering spell. I'm only saying this because it's an uncommon. I wasn't actually looking at this one.
Just an example of a common. So that was another thing I wanted to talk to you about was, in general, I feel like you should work from the Starfinder spell list when you can, just because Pathfinder's been around so much longer. And there is, if you're just looking at the full list on Archive of Nethys, there are so many spells on there because there have been so many books, and some of them.
That's good to know, because only been looking at the. At the Pathfinder spells.
Yeah, some of them are listed as
possible. There are some awesome Starfinder spells that are really cool that I want to take. So
some of them listed as uncommon also have classes associated with them. So like Courageous Anthem is, I believe, on the arcane list. Let me just double check. Because bards can be arcane. It's like a bard only spell. I guess Elemental Counter is just like regular uncommon, but there's not that many of them.
Like Bramble Bush is, I wasn't really looking to do that one. But it looks like none of the ones on the Starfinder list.
Yeah, I feel like some of them might come out of the adventure path that they were written in. So they're like, oh, you have to be a member of the secret druids of the forest to learn this spell. So it makes sense in like the world where it's like an organization spell, and there's some feats that are like that too in Pathfinder, but for Starfinder I would say keep to the Starfinder spell list, and then we can explore dredging up ancient information later in the form of like actual scrolls that you can copy into your spell book later on. And kind of the same thing goes with technology. I'm really going to suggest everyone does stick with Starfinder armor and weapons, unless you really want to go down the route of an archaic or a magic weapon. And like I said, again, maybe those will show up at some point in the adventure. Yeah,
I'm planning on doing just standard Starfinder stuff for all of that. I'm glad you mentioned the spells. Again, I had only been looking at the Pathfinder spells and getting a little overwhelmed by the spell list.
But there's a good equivalence of some, but not all of them. So I'm just like looking. Frostbite is a level one spell that is not on the Starfinder spell list, but there's probably some other cold spell that is.
Yeah.
But if not, if you were like, oh, I want to do all ice magic, I would say feel free to look at the Pathfinder spells as well for, let's see if, what did I just say? What spell? Oh, Frostbite. Frostbite has the cold trait to it. If you want to do old cold spells, for example, there's 30 of them or 20 of them. But yeah, so it sounds like you have a good idea for some of the options. Oh, the other feat that we didn't go over was familiar. You can have a little trained familiar creature.
Which I've thought about this a lot because with the Magitek school that I was thinking about doing before I realized that half of the stuff wouldn't work. Having a construct was a big part of that. So I talked myself out of it, but I haven't really thought about a familiar since then. And I know me, and if I have a familiar that can talk, I will make it the most annoying thing for anyone listening to talk to it.
Yeah, I think at first, at least, only you can understand your familiar. I think they have the ability later on to get like true speech, but I think it's like a kind of like a psychic bond at first. There's a lot of rules for familiars, but if you want to make it a animate kind of like creature or movable object, they can like deliver spells. For example, is I think a an ability that they have. So if something has like a touch spell distance, like you have to touch the enemy to cast it, you can
get over there and do it.
Yeah, you could send it through your familiar and then they can do it. So it keeps you out of harm's way in some capabilities. And it doesn't have to be a living creature. It can be like an RC car or a little wind-up toy soldier kind of thing. Yeah. Wizard, Drew. You're a wizard now. Drew.
Oh, boy.
How exciting. Some of the other things that I talked about with players was also some of the other folks that we're doing these background stories on is not the what your character is, but the why your character is questions. One of the first questions is more of a look inside kind of thing. What aspects of the characters that you've made on the podcast in the past have you really enjoyed playing? You seem to get hung up on doing a voice every once in a while, but
only the voice that I got most hung up on was for Zilix in the last season. Other than that, I've had some pretty normal voices, consistent voices.
Well, do you feel like there's any one character that was like leagues more fun to play than the others, or?
Oh, it's always been Knack. Knack will always be my favorite character. I'm sorry.
Why? Drew?
Part of it was my first one, so mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time thinking about it, and partly it's because he's the character I've played the most of any of our characters.
Yeah, 20 full levels.
Yeah, but it also has a lot to do with the fact that Knack got to do a lot of stuff out of combat, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. while I may have complained at the time that I didn't have a lot to do in combat from a damage perspective, I was still using get 'em and using clever feint and coming up with silly lines to say when trying to feint things in battle. And yeah, I might have done 1d6 damage at level 20. I still provided a lot of backup to other characters. But out of combat, I got to do a lot. And that's something where my last few characters just haven't really had the skills to do that.
I don't know. Zilix was pretty powerhouse towards the end, but
he was powerhouse in battle, but he wasn't very good out of battle until I got the nanocyte abilities to give myself randomly my level in bonus skills.
It's an important question because you have the capability of doing a lot with or going a lot of different directions with Wizard. Do you want to be like the Rambo / Terminator wizard with super damaging spells, or do you want to be more of a support wizard that has like a grab bag of maybe this is not going to be at all useful in a combat, but like this spell could, if we're running away, be very helpful.
I'm still figuring that out because right mm-hmm. now my initial thing is, oh, I'm looking at these rank spells and thinking, oh, that does a good bit of damage and that does a good bit of damage, that will be, and they're different types of damage, so mm-hmm. I can do something there. But then I'm looking at cantrips and thinking, oh, that could be fun. Oh, that could be a lot of fun. There's one cantrip that I was really excited about until I read that it's the backup music cantrip. See if I can remember what it was called.
Is it a Starfinder?
It was a Pathfinder. Musical accompaniment. I thought it would be awesome based on what we were talking about with my character recently. Because again, a spoiler warning for the series. I want my spellbook to be like a Clickwheel iPod and the playlists created on it to be like the spells that I pick, like the playlist spells. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, having a cool musical thing would be awesome to back that up, but you can't control the exact music the spell creates. I'm done with it. No, thank you.
Just atonal music coming out. Yeah, I think deciding what direction your character is going to be, will help you pick those spells and what you where you want to be in the combat. Do you, if you want to be more like Knack, there's a lot of kind of support spells or buffing or debuffing kind of things that you can do. And then you can just have a couple of direct damage cantrips. And if you're not doing something like that, you can just blast someone with a electric arc.
Yeah, or
easy peasy.
The thing that when we talked about the School of Unified Magical Theory, which I will probably rename before we start this, is the school spell with it is Hand of the Apprentice, where you basically take your weapon, propel it across the room and into something, and then draw it back, which is a very cool sounding thing. And with that, I feel like I've got to have some more martial ability to what we're doing.
That is very cool, actually. It seems too easy, but Kala's got to use like a trident or a bident or something, right?
Or just like either a trident or like a pole arm kind of thing. Mm. Just any kind of like bladed long arm kind of thing.
Yeah. Another question I have asked folks is like, where you see the character fitting into the party dynamic? Are they a leader kind of character? Are they a loner or rebel? Are they angry or happy? Are they the brooding type? Where do you see this kind of character right now leaning for you?
So I'm playing this character a bit younger. And I believe this character may think that they're a leader, or may think that they are the smartest person in the room on any particular thing that they're doing. That may not always turn out to be correct.
I wouldn't know about that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know about not being the smartest person. Oh, wait, did you say smartest or smart aleckness?
Sometimes both. But I'm anticipating this guy being... he has been made to feel special based on what he has done and what he has accomplished. But as a result, it has given him an inflated sense of self-importance that will sometimes work out in his favor and sometimes will not, based on how them dice roll. But that's a thing. I think because he is young, I'm leaning into the recruit side of things as being a young character. That they don't know what they don't know yet. But what they do know is quite a bit, because they've had to study very hard to do all the things they can do. But as a result, a little bit of an ego coming into play.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like it. I don't think anyone else has gone that route. Maybe. I don't know. I don't want to spoil anything for other characters, but, we've already talked potentially about blind spots or Achilles heels, I think, for a wizard kind of character like this. What about your agenda? Is there a reason that they would be out in an adventuring party at the start of the campaign? Is it just for money? If it is for money, what do they need the money for? Do they want more magical spells? Do they want powers?
I think primarily the way that I am going about it is... And this partially fits into the School of Unified Magical Theory, where you have no set curriculum and you're just going out into the world and trying to figure out what you can figure out, is that he thinks he can do better than anybody else. He has already taught himself and learned a number of spells. But because he is stuck on Kalo, where there's a lot of water, not a lot of opportunity to study fire magic, for example.
Ooh, that's a good limitation. No fireball.
We're gonna learn that. We're gonna learn some.
No fireball at the beginning.
It's funny you mentioned looking at this like an Avatar the Last Airbender kind of thing, of going in and knowing how to be a waterbender really well and having to learn all of these other things. I think that's going into the backstory that I'm still in the process of writing, of knowing what you know and knowing there's other stuff out there and attempting to master this sort of wholly foreign idea of what stuff is, just because you're outside of your own element.
Yeah, and part of my suggestion we talked a little bit about before was like maybe Callow magic is all kind of water based, so it looks like you're water bending when you're actually casting like almost any spell. But
yeah,
like Force Barrage is the what used to be known as magic missile. Maybe instead of magical missiles, you're like literally like high pressure like water blasts. Yeah. of magical force, so it still has a splash effect. You're hitting people with like super soakers at 2000 psi, the jump spell, for example. It like makes you jump really high. It's like a water jet, like lifts you off. Describing spells differently in that way, not necessarily just taking water bending spells at first, but just changing up how they work. And I would suggest this for probably other ancestries too, if they wanted to do this in their Starfinder game. Take a Starfinder ancestry and apply that ancestry's background to what is a let me look at the class here. Spoiler warning, what does a champion look like on the Vescarium? Or what is an Adarin Kasothan monk like? And how is that different from a Solarian in space? Or I'm very excited about Jabert as well. He's playing a Vlaka Oracle. How is that tradition different? What's a barbarian Ahsoki like? There's a lot of fun examples of switching up based on the kind of Starfinder-iness of it. My last question for you here, Drew, is maybe outside of the Callow military, are there other societal factors that like shaped your character in universe? Do you see them being religious, for example? Do you see them being anti-authoritarian, or do they worship the military?
So I, and you know this because we have texted about it, but I, in the process of creating this character, created a lot of really terrible people. I created a lot of just awful people that I didn't want to play because they were just
I was excited terrible. About all of them, because I feel like when we do long form games like this, it's so fun to make a terrible person like a Vesk space pirate, and then they turn into super good guys.
We're not talking about bad people like that have done bad things. We're talking about just people that are too miserable to be around.
You made a whole bunch of characters that don't return their carts at the grocery store and just leave them in like parking spots.
I created a bunch of characters that listen to very specific podcasts in 2025.
Oh boy.
It sucked. So I was venturing not to make one of those guys, and I left a lot of things out as a result.
Dial it back.
one of them was I'm just gonna say it because I'm not gonna do this because I hated this character.
Are you sure you don't want to do it with your next character? Because Tyler pitched a character in like book three or season three we didn't use until season five.
This was a guy that was caught up in the Manosphere tradition of following Ragadan the
That's a terrible idea.
It was awful. His whole deal was going to be like going around and being cool and hooking up with people because that's what Ragadan did. No, this sucks. No, thank you.
It just sounds like a character that anyone would make when they're in high school. It's like, oh yeah, this is the coolest character. And he's got a leather jacket, an eel jacket.
Oh man, yeah, that guy sucked, and I'm not playing him because as a result I have reworked a lot of this stuff because
make this Callow or Kalo character the opposite or somewhat different, and I think it's good to know that you don't want to play something because then you can actively like look the other direction of do you want to play
Well, but that's another thing where it's like there are negative aspects to this character that I do want to experiment with and experience. Yes. If there is an NPC or a choice that this character has to make that feeds directly into his ego, like, that's an interesting play to go down versus just starting with one of the most miserable people that you'd ever want to be around.
I like the idea that they think they're the leader, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be super charismatic, which is fine. But
I'm going to put points into, I don't know if I'll put points into charisma, but I'm definitely going to put points into performance. So we'll
right.
see if that makes a difference.
All right. Sounds fun. Sounds like you do have a lot of homework to do. I'm sorry. We have a while before we are playing the game. We're recording this a little bit in advance of that. But do you feel like you are ready to start writing up like actual character sheets and backstory kind of stuff after chatting?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. Okay. What is there anything that we can say here before we sign off that can put you in a better frame of mind?
No, it's honestly you reminding me to actually look at the Starfinder spell list that is taking a lot off my plate. I do still, there are still some Pathfinder spells that I want to take. I think at least before I look at this, specifically the cantrip about warp step, which seems really cool to get across spaces very quickly, and I don't yet know if there is a Starfinder equivalent to that, but yeah, I will probably shoot my spell list to you before we do all of this, just to make sure you're like, yes.
yeah I can check over it for you and then make sure you have all the bonus spells that you would get because of the school. But the hard work you'll have to do is like expanding that spell list, and then you as a wizard have to pick every day the spells that you want to go with. When I played in first edition, which was kind of hard, a prepared spellcaster, I had three lists, and one was like, I'm going to war that day, and the other was like general exploration.
Yeah,
and the other was like, I am in more of a downtime, not a threat kind of thing.
At least they have made cantrips in 2E way more powerful and useful. That was always like, even watching Miles play Raimi in season 1 and season 4, it was like, oh wow, so yeah, he's got these cool spells that he can do like twice, and then he's just back to shooting a gun like everybody else.
Yeah, that's the thing. As a wizard with a most of them are two actions and our three action economy, you can have a pistol and then also cast spells. And if you're not doing like attack spells, you have no penalty on that pistol shot. So you can have like kind of like a do a little bit of both.
Or I can just have cantrips that do roughly the same amount of damage that a pistol can do.
I'm just saying with a almost all the cantrips are two actions, like the attack ones.
You
can cast one cantrip and
a pistol shot is not. Yeah, that makes sense.
There are some cantrips that are a single action, and those will be nice to have in your back pocket as well. A pretty classic one is shield. You can just throw up a magical shield as a single action pretty easily. All right. That's going to do it for our chat. I'm feeling a lot more excited in general about all the characters after each chat with the players. But I'm just more excited to get down to play and get to meet them and have them meet one another. I think that's always some of the most fun in our seasons, our episode ones, what have you. Are you excited to get this guy out there and get them meeting everybody else?
I hope so.
Okay. All right. That is going to do it. Everyone out there, thank you for listening. Whether this is the first episode that we did, I think I had them alphabetical order and you were first, or if this is the last, thank you for listening to these. I know this has been a long time of campaign prep for our listeners. Listen to one of these per week, but we have all five players that we're going to do, and we appreciate you listening to them. Drew, thank you for being here with me.
Thank you, Patrick.
We will catch you next time, Starfinders and Crittermanders, on the next episode. So long.
Bye-bye. I need a new bye-bye for the season, for the series, new series.
Bye-bye.
Hasta la vista.
No, that's not going to work. We'll figure it out.
You're a wizard, so it'd be like, farewell.
Goodbye.
Been listening to Cosmic Crit, the Starfinder role-playing game and adventure paths are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder and Starfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.